I am Robin's fact-based curiosity. I am Sean's sardonic bemusement. I am Camila's dance of pure joy. We've just lost cabin pressure as it's time to tangle with that titan of late 90s cinema, Fight Club. It was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm here with two unassuming country musicians who just had Steven Seagal bum rush the stage. It's Camila Adams.
Yeehaw!
Robin Hitchcock.
Fire down below, folks.
You know what the great thing about us doing this episode early is that now Steven Seagal only gets 1 week on our banner image instead of two.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. Take that, Steve.
Yeah. He's living his life in the most confusing ways possible. People have seen this movie. Like, I got replies on Facebook. I don't know if this was like a, you know, the cheapest thing in the world to put on TNT for several years in the late 90s, but people certainly remember it.
I don't know how.
Truck fight.
And I also guess there's legitimate Steven Seagal fans out there, because I think I went on a Letterboxd and was like looking at reviews for it on there, and there were a lot of people like, by far the best Steven Seagal movie there is, and I'm like, Jesus, like, what are the other ones like?
That's nonsense. One of them has Pam Grier in it, therefore is better.
Oh, really? Yeah, just by proxy, just by that statement alone.
Quick aside, this is me, Robin, who edits the audio for this show, saying, yeah, we have some fans running. It's fucking 95 degrees. Deal with it.
Bitch is a sweat.
Sorry, everybody. Man, did movie theaters open back up at the right time. I know, like, I need a dark, air-conditioned room to go sit in. Oh, right. I could do that again.
Yeah, you have one of those now.
Yeah. Thanks also to Robin for cutting off the recap of Fire Down Below, because why would we? There's Fight Club to talk about. Very briefly, Fire Down Below ends up in 78th among the movies we've evaluated. 78th place with a score of 33. That is 12 from the bottom, sandwiched in between Chronicle at 34, then Fire Down Below, then Staying Alive at 31 and 2/3. Sure, why not? Here's some numbers that may come into play. I just want everybody to know. We'll find out how close we get. Our top 10 threshold. To make our top 10 at the current time, you've got to hit about an 81. Or an 80 and 2/3 with some tiebreakers. Coming to America is in 10th place right now. You've got to be a better movie than Coming to America. To knock 7 out of 7th. For some Fincher on Fincher violence, that would take a score above 85 and 2/3. And the current Nonomia, number one movie in America, remains Alien at 89.5. So you would really need to be flirting with 90 to become our new favorite.
As I was watching this, I kept thinking that 7 is probably no longer going to be in 7th place after today.
Fincher on Fincher violence.
I wonder, is this a better David Fincher movie? Is this the best David Fincher movie? We'll save that for deeper down the rabbit hole. Because first, hey, has everyone seen Fight Club before? I'm going to guess yes.
Yeah, a few times.
Once or twice.
It was
go ahead, Camila. I know you're the closest we have to a stand.
Right. I don't even recall exactly how it came on my radar, because I don't think it was like a lot of big marketing going on with it, but like some of the marketing campaign that I did see, like they had these movie trailers that were like PSAs and I remember, and they had the website. And that the website may have been like super cool or something at that time in 99 or something. And I was probably like a huge hard on for Brad Pitt at that point in time in my life and in his career. So, but I was like desperate. It was like a countdown to when this movie was going to be released for me to go see it in the theater. And I remember having to wait. I think it was like in the summer. And my boyfriend at the time was away, was at home in Michigan for the summer. And so when I had to wait for him to come back to see it with him. And that like almost ruined me. Like it was, but yeah, but it was like a really big deal for me. And I don't even recall how it got on my radar.
Maybe he was away for Columbus Day. Wasn't it an October release?
Yes, October 15th.
And the reason that I know this is because I was thinking about my Fight Club first experience, which I think I might have actually mentioned on this show before, which is that this is one of those movies that I saw kind of by accident.
Right.
Where I was meeting up with my childhood best friend, who I had not seen in 5 or 6 years because I had moved away. Her dad moved to New York, and she was like, hey, come to New York and let's, you know, meet each other and hang out. And so we stayed at her dad's place in Queens, and we were going to go see They Might Be Giants, but we couldn't find the subway station. And so we did not see They Might Be Giants. We saw the movie Fight Club. And I remember saying, I can't believe that this was a number one, because I remember us being like of a handful of people in the theater. So I went and I looked at They Might Be Giants tour dates, and it turns out I saw it its second weekend that it was over.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't recall it. I think I remember reading something about it, them toying with the idea of releasing it as an art film because they couldn't, I guess, production couldn't really decide or agree upon how they wanted to market this and all that kind of business. So I feel like I probably saw it like Melwood screening room or something like that here. Like I don't. Yeah. So it may not have even been in like a full on like real theater. And I think that could also be a reason why I was like so anxious to see it, because of being afraid that it was going to be gone like soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're the exception, Camille. We'll get into it more. But this was, you can't even really call it a hit in its theatrical release. It is much more, maybe more than anything else, one of the movies that like made DVD players a thing.
Right.
It was a ubiquitous DVD for years and years and years. And I think that's where most people saw it. I remember watching Fight Club for the first time, but I don't remember the circumstances at all. I think I rented it on VHS and just watched it in my parents' home probably a year or two later. I know I didn't see it in the theater. But it just feels like it's always been there, doesn't it? It just feels like...
When was there a time I didn't watch Fight Club?
A permanent part of culture.
Yeah, the DVD was, it was like, and I'm assuming that had to have been like right around the time when DVD players just started to get like their momentum and stuff. And I think that the first DVD I owned was Memento, and I'm pretty sure the second one was Fight Club. And I remember them having like all these really awesome extras on it. And that was like the big thing. I think that was like my selling point to my mom, because I was like, I couldn't afford the DVD player at the time, but I was like trying to like get my mom to buy it for me for a Christmas present or something like that. And I was like, yeah, you know, and the DVDs, they have all these like extra stuff on there, because I'm like in film school at the time. Like, and they have all this extra stuff and, you know, things like behind the scenes and stuff about like, you know, making movies and blah, 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 blah. Like trying to sell it on her. Like, like this will help me in my art.
It was the coolest fucking thing in the world, though. Like, I remember the first time I listened to a DVD commentary,
right.
Like just my little film loving heart exploded.
Right.
And it was, honestly, it's kind of like, I hope it's not gone forever, but like as people move away from physical media, and I don't understand why there's not more commentaries available on streaming services, it seems like a no-brainer to me.
Right.
I agree with you. At the same time, I cannot tell you the last time I've listened to a commentary track. I think it's because anytime I would, and I have, once I started collecting Criterions, I was like, I have commentary tracks for Silence of the Lambs and all of this stuff that I would love to know more about. And then I sit down and I'm like, but I have other movies I own that I haven't watched yet.
Right.
Yes.
I kind of just want to watch the movie right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'll get to a place where I want to sit down and listen to commentary, and you rarely do.
Well, and I know we're not going to cover everything. Read the IMDb trivia for Fight Club, because I think like the 2-disc edition had like 4 different commentaries on it. So the IMDb trivia is all of these factoids from filming that are fast. There's so much information.
Yeah.
As you would imagine. hey, what's Fight Club about? You know, but let's recap it anyway, shall we? Robin, if you just said, you know, Fight Club, that's enough. But let's do it anyway, shall we?
Yeah.
Here with the 60-second recap. It's Robin Hitchcock, and go.
Ed Norton plays an insomniac office drone who starts attending support groups for conditions he does not have because he's never heard of just hiring a therapist. This plan goes awry when a woman named Marla appears at his testicular cancer group because knowing other people are as full of shit as he is ruins it for him. Speaking of full of shit, he meets Tyler Durden, a manly paragon of not following society's rules and looking sexy while doing it, and moves into his shithole soap house after his apartment blows up. After a night of drinking, Tyler says, I want you to hit me as hard as you can. And that parking lot fight evolves into a network of underground fight clubs, which evolves into a network of for the lulz domestic terrorists called Project Mayhem. He tries to pump the brakes on Project Mayhem, but figures out that he is Tyler Durden. And that Brad Pitt looking fellow is a manifestation of his id and toxic masculinity in general. He shoots himself in the face, which rids him of Tyler, saves Marla, but not in time to stop the explosions. Cue the Pixies and 20 years of men being wrong about this movie.
Very well done. Plot end.
Yeah, that was a great recap. There's so much that goes on in it, and you managed to sum it up in 60 seconds. Good job.
I cut out one of the sentences about Marla, and I feel bad, but I figure we have plenty of time to talk about Marla.
Yeah, the mistreatment of Marla.
Yes,
justice for Marla.
Justice for Marla, indeed.
Why would she go back? She doesn't care about anything to begin with.
Right.
Why is she going back for this asshole?
I mean, I do think that that is probably one of, like, the bigger failures of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, women make bad choices, especially when they're getting dicked well. So
but I figure that
was not just in his imagination that Tyler Durden is amazing at sex.
I just feel like it wouldn't be as bad if she weren't the only woman in this fucking film, basically.
Right. But honestly, like, I was thinking about this. I was like, I kind of wish she were literally the only woman, because that other woman who speaks, I guess they're like, maybe one of the support group people is like, welcome, have some coffee. But like, right, the woman who is like, I just want to get fucked one last
right
time,
mm-hmm,
like, does not particularly add anything to the film other than kind of like cheap shot misogyny. And like, listen to this woman who wants to have sex and she's not fuckable. Like, that's gross. And the whole idea of Marla as like a construct of woman as a problem rather than an actual person herself, which is something that Helena Bonham Carter plays so fucking well.
Right.
It's like, I think in a way it would work better if she were really the only woman who talks. And that's such a weird thing for me to want from a movie, but I do.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
How much do you think that Tyler is, how much of Marla do you think it is in Tyler? One thing that I, you know, thought consciously about this time is how much earlier Marla shows up than Tyler really shows up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And is Marla like the dark side of himself plus or rather is Tyler the dark side of the narrator plus a little bit of Marla? Is Tyler the version of the narrator that he thinks Marla wants? Like, she's in the stew of Tyler, right?
Yeah.
That's a good point that you're making. I was kind of thinking about that as Robin was going on about, you know, her being the only woman, because there is a change when he starts to realize that he is Tyler. Marla changes also.
Mm-hmm.
Her physicality, her mental stability, like, it kind of
seems more like a real person.
Right. Yeah. She's coming down. The character is coming off a little bit more. And so that might be, like, that's a good point. There might be something to that.
Right. I think that Marla is Tyler is a representation of everything he wants to be as a man. And Marla is a representation of everything he hates about being like a woman. But she's also a real person.
Right.
You're right, though. The ending scenes, Marla doesn't say, I haven't been fucked like that since grade school.
Right.
Like, it's much less of a, you know, the business about that line.
I want to have your abortion.
Yeah. There were like five other ones. They're just like, okay, I guess this is the best that we can do.
The way I heard it was, it started as, I want to have your abortion. And they were like, change it. And Fincher was like, I'll change it if you take the next thing I put in, no matter what it is. And they were like, you can't say I'm in, like, grade school. And he was like, you said whatever I said next. Oh, boy. Well, that was adjacent to a fact. So let's go over some facts, shall we? Fight Club was released October 15th, 1999. the established greatest year in movie history as determined by an earlier version of this podcast. It was the 27th number one movie of the year, winning its opening weekend with just over $11 million, and it was close. Fight Club only won by about $800,000 over the defending champion, the three-week champion, Double Jeopardy, with Ashley Judd and Tommy Lee Jones. That was the difference. $800,000 between Fight Club not becoming a number one movie at all.
Wow.
And because it was only a one weekend winner, it fell to third place the next weekend behind The Best Man, the first version of what would eventually have The Best Man
with Taye Diggs in them
reunion. Yeah, yeah. And it dropped below Double Jeopardy in its second weekend. It fell to seventh, then to 10th. Not a really a box office hit, just a kind of barely there one weekend champion.
That's crazy.
A total of $37 million in box office. That's low. It's 54th for the year.
Wow.
Movies that beat Fight Club at the box office include Forces of Nature, Anna and the King, the House on Haunted Hill remake, our old friend Stigmata, all 1999 wow. movies that did better than Fight Club. Because it was almost entirely a DVD success, Fincher was extensively involved in both the content and the packaging of the DVD. He was among the first directors to really, really care about what was on the DVD. Won all kinds of awards from people who give out best DVD awards that year. It sold more than 6 million copies in its first 10 years in release. It earned close to $60 million in rentals.
Damn.
Rental wow. fees. Do you want to know why Blockbuster resisted the push to digital? There's why. Because it made $60 million from this one movie. Nearly double the box office of Fight Club. I think there were a few years there where, you know, there was probably a rack of Fight Club and a rack of Austin Powers at the front of the store. Fight Club was nominated for one Oscar, Robin.
Ooh.
Editing?
Sound?
Sound effects editing.
Yeah, for the meat slapping.
Yeah. Lost to, unsurprisingly lost to The Matrix. This was the three nominee era. The other nominee was Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. Not a lot of awards attention. There's some stray things. The then nascent Online Film Critics Society liked it a lot. But now, if you believe IMDb, it's the 11th best movie of all time. Currently number 11 on IMDb's all-time rankings. Just barely held out of the top 10 by The Fellowship of the Ring. There are two Lord of the Rings in IMDb's top 10.
Oh my God.
IMDb's top 10. What do 20-year-old white boys like?
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, let's keep it into regard. Like, who is actually making time to make these lists?
Yeah. And it is not the highest rated IMDb film we have covered. That would be Pulp Fiction, which is an eighth. A Fight Club average reading of 8.8 on IMDb. There are only four 9-plus averages. The Forever Champ, Shawshank Redemption, is a 9.2. Godfather is 9.1. Godfather Part 2 and The Dark Knight are 9. I hope
Sorry.
We get Dark Knight. I hope we get Dark Knight someday.
I keep not watching it because I know that I'm eventually going to have to watch it for this show.
Right.
I am so curious because at the time... Right, at the time it was like, no superhero movie has ever or will ever be this good again. And I wonder if you went back, you'd be like, well, Heath Ledger's really good.
So. Right.
So, I think it's a perfect comparison to this movie. Honestly, it is a fucking miracle that I still like this movie, despite men's best efforts to take it from me.
Right. And I came in this time around like, is this going to be my 100 as a top rating ever? And we'll find out.
Well, let's find out.
we'll find out in a bit. Put a pin in it. First point of order after the facts. Over on Letterboxd, which certainly tends a bit more film nerd than film bro, Fight Club is 110th all time.
That
makes 4.3 out of 5. The top all time on Letterboxd is Parasite.
Interesting. All-time. I still have to see that.
You should. This week's really great Letterboxd lists containing this film are movies that are actually gay rom-coms but advertised as men being cool.
Where's I'm gonna have to check out that list.
And movies where a character is involved in an incident which briefly impairs their hearing and leads to us hearing for a few seconds to symbolize this. Good list.
Good. I like it.
there are plenty more retrospective accolades for Fight Club. The magazine Total Film, they hit their 10th anniversary in 2007. They said Fight Club was the best movie of their first 10 years. Empire magazine has called it 6th and 8th all time, their reader polls. You bring readers into it, things get screwy. For all of that, the reviews are okay. It has a 79% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is heavily boosted by people going back and reviewing later.
Right, I bet when it came out, it was more like a 55-60.
Ebert gave it a 2 out of 4.
Ebert's review of this movie is fucking great. It's such a good example of a review that I like almost entirely disagree with, but I'm like, but you're also right. Like, he basically is just saying, like, if this is satire, it's failing, because to me, this feels like a fascist rah-rah film. And he was right.
That's what I want to get into after you get into Why Are Men. Yeah. here's a round of alternate casting, by the way. Possible starting lineup for Fight Club, the movie you might have had. As Tyler Durden, Russell Crowe, one producer was really pushing hard.
Fighting around the world.
As the narrator, Matt Damon.
No.
The original choice for Marla, Janine Garofalo.
What?
A tale of two reactions on the pod there.
I feel like there would have been a lot of so-called jokes at Janine's expense in the script, like unnecessarily, just to, you know.
Helena Bonham Carter being more conventionally attractive serves the plot of the film. We keep saying things that are totally out of line with our normal values.
Right, exactly.
I think we all agree.
No, that's true. Depending on who you believe, Janine did not go as far in the process as the one who nearly got it. Reese Witherspoon very nearly played Marla.
No, that thank you. Worked. No, thank you. She was what, 12? There's no fucking way. I don't believe that Reese Witherspoon has the chops to pull off Marla Singer.
Really?
Yeah, I don't buy it. Like, she's got a great lane right now going. Rich white lady in the suburbs, helping other people with their problems.
Right, I read one of the books in her book club. It was good. I think she could have done it. Wouldn't have been as good. This casting is perfect. We can all agree. The casting of the big three here are perfect. Also, the casting of Jared Leto as a face you have to punch.
Right.
But I think Reese could have done it. She passed because she thought it was too dark. And, you know, she was in Legally Blonde, 2 years later? So she made the right career moves.
I mean, but she also was in Election, which is, like, she has largely the same function in Election.
But it comes off so much different. I mean, it's just so much.
Because that she's coded as a teen, like she's a teenager in that movie. That does make a big difference. Right. I think you are right that it helps that Helena Bonham Carter is an adult.
Right.
I am forever looking at the big Hollywood treasures auctions that get pushed online. I don't know if you get Instagram ads for these. I always get Instagram and Facebook ads when there's a big auction of, you know, one of a kind set pieces and prop. There's a big one of these coming up. I will look through the full catalog, which is like 600 different lots, just hoping that there's something that's like estimated at $900 and I love, but no one else does. And right. Be like, yes, I'm going to own that thing from that thing. There's one of these coming up at the end of the month. The big headline items are Indiana Jones's hat.
Ha!
Temple of Doom.
Wow.
Estimated winning bid between $150,000 and $250,000. And Harry Potter's glasses and original letter to Hogwarts are available as well. But two pieces of Fight Club can be yours. If you're looking for a bargain, there is a set of screen-used Paper Street Soap Company wrappers. The estimates for those only $400 to $600. And for an estimated bid between maybe $2,000 and $3,000, you yourself can own the very furniture catalog that Edward Norton read sitting on that toilet.
Listen, I've been looking for Tyler Durden's red square sunglasses for like 20 years, and I'm still...
right.
So if you, had you said those, I might have been. It might have piqued my interest a little bit.
I love Tyler's sense of style.
Right? Like, his whole costume is just, like, everything. Every piece of wardrobe he wears, I'm just like, yes, mwah. Well done. So shout out to the costume designer.
Yeah, seriously.
There was one of these auctions a few years ago where it included the hero knife. So the knife for the close-up shots, the hero knife from the end of Scream. And it went for less than $5,000. Now, at that time, I did not have $5,000. But if I had, right, I'd be holding it up to the camera right now, you know? Wrapping up the Faxi segment, as I said, there are 100,000 pieces of Fight Club trivia. Find your own favorite. Here's just one good one. The only Fight Club Titanic connection I can make. You know the ice cave sequence with the penguin, and he's there, and he's got frozen breath. He breathes out, and you can see his breath because it's cold. That is digitally inserted breath. Where did they get the breath footage?
Leo.
From Leonardo DiCaprio's mouth as he was drowning at the end. That is Titanic breath.
I appreciate the recycling. Reusable, man. Just go ahead and just recycle. Recycle, reuse.
Don't send some poor PA to Vancouver and say, breathe until you get a good shot. Just use Leo's breath right there.
Like, you got it. You got it right there in the next room. Come on.
To Robin for a brief treatise on Fight Club and toxic masculinity.
I was watching it, you know, Camila's frame of reference for this was, is this a 100? My frame of reference for it was, do I still like this given what I know now about what this has done to the world? And the answer is still yes. And I just spent the whole movie being like, how did people not get this?
Right.
Right? Like, how can you listen to some of the shit that Tyler says and go like, yeah, good point, man. Like, when he's talking about how he wants to climb the vines that have grown on the Sears Tower and, like, wear leather clothes that last till he dies, people listen to that and they're like, oh, this is serious, right?
This is, I mean, that is, like, just about any, what do you call it, motivational speaker. Like, that's like, you know, those bits and pieces of, like, good stuff in there. And, like, a lot of the shit that Tyler spews, like, some of it I'm there for. Like, there's a lot of things that have gotten me through. Like, you are not your bank account. You are not your job. Okay, it's like, yes, I could. But that Sears Tower, the vines thing, I'm like,
So when he's like, we're a generation of men raised by women. Maybe another woman's the last thing we need. First of all, again, as a gay love story, but it's about himself.
Right.
But secondly, what generation was not raised by women?
Right, exactly. It's like, yeah, because that one has always been a thinker for me. And then I come to it every time he says it's like, but it's been the case all the time.
Because Tyler is full of shit. And that is one of the big, like, hello, audience, Tyler is full of shit moments that people miss. I actually caught one for the first time. This isn't actually Tyler, but this is full of shit. This is a joke kind of thing. Was the narrator is so mad at Marla for invading his spaces, right? For coming to these support groups. And he specifically is like, well, obviously she doesn't have testicular cancer. And then he's like, and then she showed up at my sickle cell anemia support group. And there's a really quick shot of him surrounded by black people at this support group for a medical condition which overwhelmingly affects black people.
I missed that.
He doesn't realize that he can be the person who is in a place where he doesn't belong.
Right.
Because he's a white man, he thinks he belongs everywhere.
Right. So you wonder, is that kind of stuff, was that intentional?
Yes.
Like, for, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't actually, like, I assume David Fincher has talked about this, like, yo, everyone, relax about it. Like, this is not what this movie's about. Is that true?
I mean, I know he's definitely called it a comedy. He's like straight up been like, you know, this is a comedy. And it's not supposed to be taken as like the playbook of this is what life is like. And that's the problem. Like, there's a lot of good things in there, but like, but when you put it all into the wrong hands, or like somebody, like the core of it is speaking to like aging male toxicity and fragility and all that stuff. But yeah, like, you get, like, the wrong person to, like, listen to this. And just about anything, you know, that then they take it too far. And, you know, they start going on, like, Tyler, we trust. Like, you know, and that's, you know, and again, like, that is what literally what the movie is showing us is, like, all of these minions just coming along and, you know, yes, this is what he says. And I've never heard this before. And I hate my job as a office assistant. And so I'm going to, this makes more sense to me.
I mean, like, if you just look at, like, the political history of the United States and a lot of the rest of the world in the last 20 years, a lot of it is men feel that their dominance is threatened and freak out about it and are like, you know what's a good way to fix this problem? Fascism.
Right. And he said, even then, there's a quote in there where Tyler's like, you know, we're the forgotten middle children. Yeah. We have no great war. We have nothing to to like really be proud of. And yeah, like there's so many things. It just flip flops, like saying things like, you know, raised to believe we'd be rock gods and movie stars, and well, we grow up now and we know we're not and we're pissed off. And yeah, I feel like there's some there's some truth to that.
Right. And I guess it's like, is this movie not as good as I think it is? Because it should more forcefully say, well, you can't solve that problem by punching your way out of it.
Right.
But to me, it seems pretty clear that punching and blowing stuff up doesn't actually solve these problems.
Right. Except, you know, I am a little bit disappointed that no one has. I figured by now somebody would have blown up the credit card companies. But no. I just
apparently it's harder to make homemade explosives than this movie leads up to.
I mean, I thought for sure, like all of the hacking that's been done. Come on, what are y'all doing out here? Y'all hacking Walmart?
This morning, the internet wasn't working anymore, right? And it was like, oh, it's come.
Even at the time, I was like, Tyler, they've got backups. Like, I know this sounds very like we blow up the whole record. Right. What are they gonna do? There's a copy. They got an office right in Des Moines or some shit. It's not going to be like, whoops, you don't have to pay. Come on.
It's
come
not
on,
like they're burning paper files. Like, it's not, and it's like 1923. And it's like, oh my God, the ledgers are gone. We have no idea of keeping track of who owes what.
Robin, you're getting at the question I'm trying to answer too, which is, I know what this movie's about. It's clearly, you know, I said toxic masculinity earlier. I would go so far as to say it's just an indictment of masculinity. I mean, this is why I always say we need to ban the Greek system from universities. Amen. Because this is what happens when you just get a bunch of guys together. It turns to fascism and violence very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And there's so much in about like the weird bullshit symbol ways that people define masculinity. There is so much of this movie that's about balls. Like that, you know, that we spend a lot of time at the testicular cancer group that's called remaining men together or staying men together. And then the ultimate Project Mayhem punishment is that you're going to get your balls cut off. Like, this is a takedown of the notion that, like, we need to have our masculinity and be proud of it, which was a bigger thing in the early 90s. That was when there was all of these, like, we're going to be a bunch of men's and go into the woods and beat our chests and hunt a bear to reattach with our, you know. I get what it's about. This is the fundamental question. When it is clearly so easy to get it wrong, is that a filmmaking failure or a societal failure? Like,
I think it's societal.
When it is mostly. But on the other hand, you made Tyler Durden really fucking cool. You made the coolest guy in the world have all the sex with the hot girl and have all these funny lines and be charismatic and charming.
Amazing sunglasses.
Right. And I'm still coveting
sunglasses. Mesh shirts yet.
What did you call his hip muscle?
Oh, the devil's horns.
Devil horns, yes.
If you make it that, like, oh, but I really like that guy, though, are you derelict in your duties to make it clear?
I mean,
it's a weird argument, because it's that old Hollywood argument that's like, sin must be punished on screen, which is true, but...
But it's also, David Fincher was making a film, a Hollywood movie. He wasn't making a training video, you know? So, I mean, he's still trying to get butts in seats and still trying to sell, make his money back, or make the studio's money back. And so, yeah, like, Tyler and everything is going to be a much more glossy than what it needs to be. I mean, otherwise, then we've got fucking Requiem for a Dream. And so, yeah, I mean, it is a societal problem. And oddly enough, it's, I guess, basically, it's like the snake eating its tail, because it's a societal problem because of the media and because of the societal problem. So it's just like, it's just a continuing circle. This is round and round we go. So basically what I'm saying is, educate your children yourself the proper way. Try to like, so they have some common fucking sense when they grow up in the world.
Roger Ebert also addresses the, like, this is showing ultra violence. Like, it's actually kind of interesting. You know, when I was reading his review yesterday, I was like, oh yeah, this was exceptionally violent at the time, because by today's standards, it isn't.
I guess not.
But one other thing I wanted to say is that I did enjoy every moment that made this movie feel 22 years old, gave me this little thrill, because I was just like thinking about it in the context of, like, you know, I saw this movie in 1999, so that would be like a watching Apocalypse Now, right?
Right.
Like, it, and which felt old when I watched it in the 90s, you know, thinking about kids today watching this and seeing the, like, cheesy CGI credits and that fucking penguin and everything that makes this feel dated gave me a little joy.
I still love, like, the opening credit shots of when they're going in the garbage and, you know, going all through everything. Like, that's some still impressive stuff for me.
Yeah, I forgot that the opening credits were a Tool music video. I was like, whoa, we are of the era.
That soundtrack, though, that's like the Dust Brothers.
It's really good.
Like, fucking get out of here with that. Like,
yeah. I was thinking calling on a payphone
yes. payphone and then having it ring again and having him say, I star 69 you.
Right.
Total nonsense to it.
Right. Bloopity blop bloop bloop. That's what teenagers hear in that right now.
The other thing I was thinking about is we've talked about Falling Down on the show before, a movie that I hate.
Mm.
And I know that, Camila, you were like, I think that movie's funny.
Right.
Right. And that's, to me, that is an example of a movie where, like, if that's satire, it did not work for me.
Right.
And what is the difference here? That Brad Pitt is more charismatic and that I like looking at his body.
Right.
Right. In a way that Michael Douglas, when he is cosplaying as office drone,
right,
was completely sexless. Like, am I falling in the same trap as all of these dorm room posters?
Probably. I mean, I'm right there with you. Hi. Because, I mean, like, had it been what's his face, what was it, Russell Crowe, I probably would have never seen this movie. You know, like I said, like, Brad Pitt was the draw, and I know that was, like, a big thing too when they were trying to market this film. Like, they were really trying hard not to, like, put Brad Pitt's face all over everything where it was concerned. They were just doing the soap and all that stuff because you know what? And maybe that's why y'all didn't, like, stay in number one long in the box office, because you missed, like, that's a cash cow in 1999. Brad Pitt, come on, son. Like, you missed that. But there's, like, so many things that I do enjoy that end up, like, trumping it. And, you know, it's not just Brad Pitt's body. And it's, like, things like how well developed Tyler Durden is as a character, and just, like, mm-hmm. the subtle little crumbs that we get about exactly what type of person he is. And, like, just little things, like when they come out of the bar, and you mentioned the payphone, like, he checks the payphone for loose change and he's, like, got two bottles of beer, like, in his pocket. And it's just, like, little things like that that it's just like, oh yeah, that's who that dude is. And then you see, and, you know, we start off with Jack, the narrator. And, you know, he's, like, buttoned up and he's, like, very perfect and da-da-da-da. And then, like, slowly, like, his decline starts. Like, the more he gets entrenched into Tyler's web, he's, like, you know, like, just little things. Like, he's not tucked in shirt and he's not wearing a tie. He shows up to work with blood on. And there's also, like, all of these, like, little clues throughout. Like, it blew my mind the first time I saw it, and you find out the twist. Like, when you get, like, holy shit, they're the same person. But then you watch it, like, a second 80th time, then it's like you see the clues, like, oh, we were like he was giving us stuff this whole time, like the whole 2 hours. Like, I realized it was over 2 hour long movie, which I didn't remember it being that long.
It doesn't feel that long.
No, but, like, just we get the little clues, and there's, like, all these just fun, like, film tricks and, you know, things of, like, the blips of Tyler before we even meet him.
I'm gonna be a total asshole here and say that, wow, do the blips work so much better when you're watching this movie projected on film than when you're watching a digital copy of it.
Interesting.
And, like, it is, you know, I have basically accepted that film projectors don't exist anymore, but I am really grateful that I got to see this on an actual film projector because I remember the first time I don't actually even know if it was the first time, but the first time I noticed the little blip of Tyler standing next to the narrator, I was like, did I just see that? What the fuck? In a way that when you see it on digital, you're like, ah, okay, a blip has occurred.
Right. Yeah, I guess so.
That must be meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Because I don't recall noticing it maybe but one time in the theater. Because I remember later on, after several more viewings, it's like, oh, this happens like 4 or 5 times. Like, there's the blip of Tyler.
I remember I don't know how many. I know it was before Brad Pitt had even showed up.
Right.
Because I remember when the reveal happens being like, I knew something wasn't quite right because of the blips.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, I didn't think, I couldn't figure out what the actual end of the movie is because it's wild. This is a wild twist.
Right. And there's also, like, in the, when Jack is in the hotel room and there's the ad, like, Tyler Durden is in one of those ads.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And oh, so
brilliant. This movie's right, so fucking good.
Right? And then you and that just makes me wonder, like, okay, is this, was it that ad that gave him the physicality right. of what Tyler Durden is gonna look like for you? Like Jack's imagination? Or is it just something he just dreamt up or yeah.
All of the ways that the truth is seeded throughout are the exact right kind of hinty Easter egg.
Right.
Where there is nothing in there that on a cold first viewing you would even blink at. Nothing that was like, that was a weird way to, you know, right. it's not that, it's not this Christopher Nolan bullshit where it's like, why are you doing all of this shit? It'll make sense later. No, it is nothing when you first watch it. And then when you watch it knowing it's every minute, there's something.
Right.
You know, he says, wake up a different person.
Yes.
At the moment we see
exactly.
Full Tyler.
Like he comes, yes, right.
Time.
They cross paths at that moment.
And in the first minute, he says, I know this because Tyler knows this.
Yes.
Right. It's all in there. Then you would never notice. Yeah, it's good.
Even
it's
to the
good.
Point where he's like, and he's fighting himself in his boss's office, and he's like, and it pauses. And at this point, like David Fincher's like, okay, guys, I'm gonna give you one last right. clue. It's like it pauses,
really
like, and somehow this reminds me, for some reason, that I was reminded of Tyler and I's first fight, and then it continues.
Yeah,
that is another thing that doesn't quite work for me in this movie is that I fully believe the two guys are having a fight in a parking lot and then other guys show up and they're like, let's just fight. And then everybody starts fighting. Mm. It is harder for me to believe that two guys would walk up to a guy who's punching himself in the face and be like, yeah, let's all fight. I feel like they would be much more like, how do we contain this guy who's having a mental breakdown?
No, this is what it played in my head, is that these two guys come out, they're drunk at the bar, and this guy is fighting himself. They're like, instead of doing that, why don't you fight me? You think you're tough? Take on me, buddy. And then they fight.
That makes sense. That makes sense. You've cracked it. Thank you, Camila.
Man. I was just happy about Jared Leto getting beaten up for a minute. Let's not talk about Jared Leto and this point in his origin story. Let's talk about Meatloaf. Meatloaf is so
Meatloaf.
Good.
Meatloaf is so good.
He is. Like, bless his soul. Yes. Like, he plays this, what is it, Robert Paulson. His name is Robert Paulson. He plays this role so very well, so delicate. And he's like this delicate little flower in this giant body of Meatloaf, I guess, with these huge boobs.
Speaking of justice for Marla, Helena Bonham Carter is fantastic. Adds so much with a role that could have been nothing. I don't want to name names, but if you put like a Mila Jovovich or a normal like badass chick type actress, you know, not to paint with a broad brush, but if you put an actress like that in this role, it's nothing. She brings so much to it. And for someone who I wouldn't like put on my list of crushes, damn, in this movie. Like, I'm watching it now and I'm like, did this inform who I would let ruin my life for the next 15 years? As I think it might have.
Sean's girlfriend's flashed through my head.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess we should get to the moment of truth and rate Fight Club. Where will it go? Who will we enrage? Find out now. Let's leave Camila's reveal for the end. I did go back and forth a lot because that, you know, and it comes down to when he says, you're not a special snowflake, I consider all the damage that this movie caused. But then I'm like, I don't care, it's Fight Club. That might, that ambiguity might keep it away from the tippy top, but it only brings it down to a 91. I could have given a lower score than Crimson Tide. I couldn't say that Crimson Tide is a better movie than Fight Club. So it gets right. The same score from me, a 91. Robin, how about you?
It's very similar, and I'm landing on 90.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I truly was like, I kept wanting to take it out of the 90s because of 20 years of men being horrible. But right. It's not this movie's fault. This movie fucking rules.
Right.
90.
So, the moment of truth.
Yes.
Is it 100?
So, yes. No, that wasn't my answer. After watching it once yet again as a grown-ass adult, you know, it's a lot of the problems are still a little more jarring and glaring and whatnot. And so, I could not comfortably keep it at 100. So, there's that. But on the flip side, there are so many quotable moments in this film. And again, you know, it's Fight Club and I love watching it any and every time. And like, you know, to this day, anytime I walk past, have to squeeze past anyone, I say in my head, now a question of etiquette as I pass, do I give her the ass or the crutch?
Every single time.
So it is a 96 for me.
Wow.
Camille, I don't think I have any movies that are a 100.
Yeah, I don't.
I just don't.
Mulholland Drive, still the only one I've thought about and said, that's 100. I consciously watched Wizard of Oz say, is Wizard of Oz 100? 98. They don't resolve the central conflict.
That's true.
All right.
Unless Miss Gulch was killed in the tornado, in which case, cool. She's still coming for Toto.
Right.
Like,
that's
the
true.
Toto thing is not resolved.
That's true.
We're really burying the lead. This is the number one movie in America. This is our new overall champion.
All right.
92 1/3 for Fight Club. The highest rating we've ever given. It'll be tough to top that with all three of us agreeing in that it is a 90-plus movie.
Yeah.
7 is down to 8th. Aww. It was a good run.
It had a really
like
good
this
run.
Is right. This is the right movie to take 7 out of 7.
Yeah, right? Like, it only makes sense. Way to go, Finch.
Yeah. But interestingly... I was going to say, you know, you mentioned early, like, is this the best Fincher? I don't know if this is the best. My favorite is Gone Girl, which is like.
I know. That's the first one that comes to my mind, too. And I can't say it's my favorite, but I might say that it might be better than.
But like, Amy is Tyler Durden for women.
Yeah. True
you
story.
Know, like, that's the manifestation of my id. So, yeah.
The manifestation of my entire existence is the line, how's that working out for you, yes! being clever, which I feel in a very personal way.
I love it. I love it so much. You have kind of sick desperation in your laugh like that. I've said that to people before.
If we really sat down and started watching them, I mean, there's a lot of people in the world who are going to tell you that Social Network is the best venture.
Oy.
Nope. <That's>... But like one more, and I forgot that this was also a Fincher movie. Like, the beauty of this movie has this dramatic reveal and plot twist at the end is that you can go back and watch it, and nothing doesn't ruin it. Knowing what's coming next, if anything, it enhances the experience along the way. Because like every time I watch it, I see something new. Like this time around, I just realized that the priest that the guy is like trying to start a fight with, he joins Fight Club. Like, I didn't even realize that. Like, he shows up later. But on the other side, Fincher's The Game, great plot twist ending. I can't go back and watch it because
I don't really like that movie.
I remember really enjoying it at the time and being like, cool. But knowing the ending, I'm like, I can't. There's no reason. I'm good.
Yeah.
Remember the 16 seconds of our lives when Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was a big deal? Like,
kind of.
I remember going to see that movie and liking it a lot. And, you know, everyone had the book and Fincher was remaking it. And I saw the remake. And then that was that.
I think it's kind of a bummer that they didn't make the next two. Like, I would have watched them.
I thought they did make the second one.
They made them in Swedish with Noomi Rapace, but not with Rooney Mara.
So what's the other movie that Rooney Mara is in that she, like, the spider or something? Like, she's killing men or something like that. I don't remember. I don't know. I swear I just... What's her name? Rooney?
I think you are placing Rooney into one of the Swedish sequels in your mind.
Gotcha.
Oh, wait. Didn't they also make one with Claire Foy?
Yes. That is not based on one of the books.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Yeah. So they all just
We got a new bingo card because I just ran straight over it last week. Camila, tell us about new
because Sean just like obliterated the last one last week. We've still got things like, you know, Didn't Sign Up for This and Comedic Actor Take Serious Role, but we've got some new stuff like Don't Look at the Explosion. So, you know, an explosion, mm-hmm. somebody's walking away from it. We have an Earth Invasion. We have the gun jams during somebody's trying to kill someone. A character falls in high heels. Now, I know we've already seen Purple Rain, but I specifically did not put a woman falls in high heels, because we might end up, I don't know, is Wong Fu on here on the list? I don't. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Those are the new ones.
Well, we've got a few of them. We've got bike, skateboard, or roller skates.
Yes, which I think another new notice was that Brad Pitt is pantless when he's riding that bicycle around Paper Street. Oh. When he falls over, just butt cheeks. Just
cigarette smoking.
Yeah, Marla's big intro.
Yeah. Do you trust me? Is there, do you trust me around the soap scene, the chemical burn scene?
I feel like there is.
I fast-forwarded.
Yes. I think there's something to that extent. So I will allow it.
I don't remember a gun jamming.
No.
All right, those three. Bike, skateboard, or roller skates, do you trust me, and cigarette smoking.
And don't forget your free space of Tony Goldwyn.
Yeah, I'm one away again. Somebody falls in their high heels next week.
I don't know where this is supposed. Out of all the things I know about this, I don't know where Fight Club is supposed to take place.
Just like in Seven.
Ah, interesting.
Hmm. Well, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I know we've been here for a while, so let's. Have we? I don't know. Yeah, this is. It's Fight Club. We had some things to say about it. Wait, Camila, I was excited for this because there was something you didn't like. I saw on Letterboxd you giving a big old. It was Spiral. You gave
a bad. Oh,
no.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so sad for you.
You know, and I went in with very low expectations because it's still a Saw franchise movie. And you know what? I love them. And I know that you going in, it's like, this shit could be really trash, but I will still enjoy it to a certain extent. I'm going to tell y'all right now, I'm going to spoil the ending. So if you want to shut it off now, shut it off now. The ending. I was okay with most of what was happening with Spiral until we got to the very end. And Samuel L. Jackson has been taken by the, and I'm sure you haven't seen it, right, Robin?
No.
Okay, yeah. So Samuel L. Jackson is taken by, you know, the guy with the Saw guy or whatever, the villain, and you know, blah blah blah, reasons. But the last thing is that he's got Samuel L. hooked up to this thing where he's like a puppet, he's like a marionette, and so Sam is like halfway bled out, and he's like a marionette, and the police are coming in to save him. But then they all swarm in. The guy shuts off the lights, shuts on like a silhouette, like lights. So Sam is just a silhouette. And then come to find out he has attached a gun to Sam's arm. And so like the final, like the last one, the last second to last shot is a black man unknowingly, like unarmed, basically, because he's not there with a gun, being shot down by a police force. So that's what really fucked it up for me.
Ugh.
And I walked away like, really? In 2021, this is what we're doing, huh? Like, it's so tone deaf.
It desperately is trying to have it both ways. It wants to be a movie that's criticizing these things.
Right.
But it's a police procedural. It's a straight up police procedural that also is using those issues for... you know, a cheap, weird Saw ending.
Yeah.
You know, it's doesn't
gross.
Work
for me. Police brutality should not be your gotcha twist.
Right. It was gross and insensitive. Yeah. And I just, you know, it's, yeah. Like, shame on you. Shame all on everybody involved. Like, especially like, and Chris and Sam, y'all didn't take pause. And then Chris Rock, or was it Chris Rock? I think Chris Rock is an executive producer.
Yeah. I didn't hate it. But you know, now hearing you, I hate it a little bit more.
Right. Yeah. I mean, up until that point, it was like, this is kind of hokey, yeah. But I'm still enjoying it. And then that happened, and yeah. I'm like, all right, fuck y'all. Like, I won't.
I definitely knew that guy was the bad guy, and I never figure it out. He walked on, and I was like, it's him.
Right.
That squirrely looking guy who's always doing something off screen.
Right.
Come on.
It's like, where are you going all the time? Like, why are you?
Yeah.
What? How many errands do you really have to run?
Did you watch anything you liked?
I watched The Conjuring, the Devil Made Me Do It. I'm still not sure if I liked it or not. I've watched it twice now this weekend, and I'm still not sure. I think, you know, it's just, it's different from the other two Conjurings in a lot of the spooktasticness aspect of it. And I'm still trying to figure out, but why did this all happen? And it also, there's like this overarching theme of like all of them. It's like, ah, we get it. Ed and Lorraine were in love. God.
I saw your tweet about that and you spelled it Lerv. And I still, the only one of those movies I've seen is The Nun for this. But oh, to me, that is just such a fascinating like side plot
right?
of these horror movies that like people are invested in this relationship of these two real life ghost hunters.
I guess. And what's funny is that, and while I'm watching it, I have this flash of like a possible SNL skit of like, you know, the two like the hippies with Will Ferrell, and I think it's not Sherry O'Terry, but it's the other one that play like this hippie couple that's like, you know, talking about my lover and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah. That's, and I have this flash of like Lorraine and Ed like doing that kind of shit like in the middle of like an exorcism. Like all, everything's flying around and people are trying to like, we're trying to fight for our lives here. I'm like, but Ed, I love you so much. And so...
Oh, wait, that was Rachel Dratch. Regardless.
Yes, Rachel Dratch. Yes. That's right.
Sorry.
This is supposed to be the series that has lots of different, that has the endless well of different subjects.
Right.
That it, because we've got nuns, we've got dolls, we've got Mexican folklore, we've got all kinds of things. Every movie in this series ends up with, we got to break the curse, and then the screaming ghosty lady's chasing us. No matter what you started with,
right,
they can't stop from getting back there. This franchise either needs to die or like learn a new trick.
Yeah,
it's not doing it for me anymore.
And I learned, and I just realized after watching this one, is that all of their problems are female ghosts. Like every film is like a female spook or a female demon or ghost or whatever, or Satanist or whatnot. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but I thought that this third one was supposed to have been about like Amityville. I don't know why I thought that, because I was like spending the first half hour like, when do we get to Amityville?
I think the second one ties into Amityville.
Yeah, they talk about it a little bit at the very beginning of the second one. But
do some Wikipedia on those two, because they're full of shit anyway. Like like we're posthumously retconning them into people who dashed around New England punching demons in the face. They just showed up where they thought they could get some media attention. That the one that Conjuring 2 is good. The family that had the exorcism in Conjuring 2, the Warrens flew to their house to England and showed up at their door, and the family was like, nah, they were not involved.
Really?
They were like, these people are full of shit. It's,
that's funny.
I know. Camila's recommendation is feeling ambivalent about Conjuring.
Yeah.
Robin, how are you?
I don't think I really have a recommendation because we only had a week. The new to me movie that I watched was the Angelina Jolie firefighter movie.
How was that?
It's fine. It's one of those movies where it's like, I don't understand why this exists, why anyone, who asked for this? Like, what is the audience for this? Why am I watching this? And yet, it's not bad. There are a couple scenes where I'm like, oh, this is really cool. But, yeah, pretty mediocre.
All right.
Great drive-in movie. That's one where when it became clear that I wasn't going to review it.
Ooh, I wouldn't want to be in the woods while watching that movie.
That's fair. No, when it became clear that I wasn't going to get to review it, I was like, aha, a new thing for me to see at the drive-in. And, you know, is this fire or these murderers going to get to these people? That is exactly what you want when you've got your hot dog and you're kind of half paying attention in your car.
Nice.
It's a very solid outdoor choice and a very mediocre movie. I love In the Heights. I cannot tell you enough.
Good.
I it is so rare that I cry at a movie. And when I say cry at a movie, I mean kind of went a little bit for a second. Not like I had to wipe tears off my face. And that's where I was at the end of In the Heights.
Wow.
It is so beautifully put together that I imagine it's got to end up being a Best Picture nominee just on the filmmaking of it all. The way this movie is just pure joy. like pure singing, dancing, life-affirming, positive message. You know, not if anyone's criticizing it, it's like, this is a fairy tale, you can be whoever you want to be story. Yeah, but I want that right now. It's been a rough year and a right. half. The cast is fantastic. The choreography is great. The direction is great. It's the guy, I'm forgetting his name, I'm an asshole. It's the guy that did Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh.
And it's so beautifully shot and framed and put together. I love it. And it is, if you're vaccinated, see it on the biggest, loudest theater that you possibly can. I had that reaction watching a digital screener, and can't wait to go see it in person. I loved it. Loved it. Well, let's see if the next thing we draw, which, like, listen, it's going to be a come down. I don't know what we could possibly land on.
No, I have no idea. Where do we go from here?
I want to know exactly what this is before I react. In that, I want to know if we're talking about the original or the remake. Mm. Good. It's the original. You know, religious conflict takes a lot of different forms. It can be a very serious thing. It can also just be about whether or not Kevin Bacon's going to dance, because we're watching Footloose.
Yes!
That's fun. I'm glad you checked about whether it was
the original. Yeah, I know. Thank goodness.
That is two different reactions.
Yeah.
Footloose. Awesome.
That's exciting.
I did a sketch of Kevin Bacon dancing in this movie for an art class in high school that I think I might still have.
Ooh.
So I'm going to see if I can find it.
I would love to see that.
There's a stage version. I was a producer on the worst community theater version of the stage Footloose.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which soured my Footloose associations a little bit, but I look forward to overcoming that now. I have to look at the drive-ins. One of the big drive-in double features over the past year has been the Grease Footloose combo.
Huh.
I'll have to see if it's playing in the next couple of weeks, but the music, the Kevin Bacon, the John Lithgow. Who doesn't love John Lithgow?
Yeah, well, I think I've only ever seen it like maybe twice.
I haven't seen it since high school, but I loved it as a kid.
Yeah, I probably haven't either. Great.
Sweet. It's on Hulu and Prime right now.
Even better.
Right.
we're getting spoiled. Like, I know we had that Seagal break, but like, Fight Club, Hero, The Craft,
yeah.
Freaky was good, Coming to America wasn't that long ago. Like, we're due for a run of boring crap, but it's not starting this time.
Right.
So thank you, Tony. What's the Fight Club Footloose connection?
F.
Because
that was also fire down below. We're on an F train, guys.
Yes.
Make the F train, everybody.
The F train is what we couldn't find to Queens. I don't know if that's true. I'm not from New York.
Maybe. Is there an F train?
There's definitely an F train. I have no idea where it goes.
Next week, find out where the F train goes. Fight Club was released October 15th, 1999. What was the number one song in America when, briefly, people went to the theater to see Fight Club?
Was it Smooth by Ooh. Carlos Santana feat. Rob Thomas?
Feat. Rob Thomas.
No, I saw a tweet this week that was like, can you believe that at some point someone said, hey, you know who would be good to do a song with Santana? The guy from Matchbox 20. And they were right.
Right?
They were.
Such a good song. Ricky Martin.
No.
Destiny's Child.
I would remind you that we are still in the 90s.
Destiny's Child was
99. Yeah.
You've made several 90s guesses without getting to the default 90s.
Oh, Mariah Carey.
Oh.
Yes, but which one?
Oh, geez.
Oh, God. I don't know what she was doing.
I know. Point. Like, what was she doing in 99? Was it rainbows or butterflies? Like, I don't.
This is after Butterflies. There's a featuring. Mariah Carey featuring.
Some dude that you're like, why the fuck? How did they even get in the same room together?
No, it's. I mean, if these two people walked in today, the combined fame would make your house explode.
What? Isn't that with Boys to Men? With Boys to Men?
No, this is after One Sweet Day. Who's One Sweet Day about? One Sweet Day is a tribute song, and no one knows to who.
I have no idea.
Like, that is specifically about somebody dying.
Right.
Can you give us any obvious clues?
I haven't confirmed this. There may be two songs of this title that are number one songs in America. The other one being by, I think, by Pat Benatar.
Love is a Battlefield.
Heartbreaker.
Oh, Heartbreaker. Yeah, that. Who was she featured? Who was it with?
Jay-Z.
Wow.
The reason you don't know that is because of this terrible thing that persists till today, where on then on most radio stations, but still on adult contemporary radio stations,
this makes me so mad.
Cut the verse. But then, probably on 90% of pop radio stations, it wasn't a featuring. It was just Mariah.
Huh.
Yeah.
People are still, have you heard, I've heard California Girls without Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
This is still a thing.
It drives me crazy. Yeah, I'm not even going to get into it. It sucks. It's racism.
Pixies, Where Is My Mind, though? There's a good track.
Yeah, you know, I really love the rap verse on Where Is My Mind, and it's so weird that radio stations cut it out.
It was Pixies featuring Tone Loaf. Nobody knows that.